Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Bill Gates, which I know will come as a surprise to many of you because he has long been one of the leading wokeolites we look to for guidance, wisdom, and incredibly annoying software updates. Bill Gates has been a global lifesaver through vaccines, anti-malarial strategies, climate activism, and Clippy the unwanted virtual assistant. But with all of that past glory acknowledged, we find ourselves faced with a lengthy essay Mr. Microsoft wrote this week that has ripped the rug out from under all of our most cherished ideals.
Climate is a super important problem. There's enough innovation here to avoid super bad outcomes.
What? What he's saying is essentially that we've already done a lot to fix the climate crisis, and in a world where funding sources from governments are drying up, it's more important to make big gains in reducing suffering rather than small gains in reducing temperatures.
If we stop funding all vaccines and that, you know, saved you 0.1 degree, would that be a smart trade-off? That's the kind of question we have to ask. So I'm a climate activist, but I'm also a child survival activist.
After years of working so hard to prevent global warming, he now thinks the war against temperature rise can't be won, and that bigger impacts can be had by finding ways to help people make do in a hotter world rather than futilely battling to prevent the world from getting hotter. Oh dear Gaia, what a sad and tragic day to see such a bright, shining example of our faith abandon it so blatantly. We've been working diligently for decades to cultivate a fever pitch of anxiety and fear around climate change, and now that we've finally succeeded, Bill Gates wants to say global warming isn't such a big deal because in the future more people will be able to afford air conditioning? We finally have young people delaying marriage and children out of climate despair. We finally have roving bands of devotees engaging in acts of vandalism and microterrorism out of desperation over their own carbon footprints. And we actually have companies counting their carbon emissions in annual reports that virtue signal efforts to waste as much money as possible with credits, offsets, and wingnut schemes like burying manure deep in the ground. And now he wants people to think it's going to be okay if we just get creative? Does he not realize that despair is our brand? Crisis is our tactic, and doom is our gospel? How dare he try to squander all the panic and fear we've created with some uninspiring talk about how it's all probably going to be okay? He literally began his essay saying that what he calls the doomsday view of climate is wrong. Blasphemy, heresy, apostasy. We can forgive you for bringing unwanted pressure to save files to OneDrive and your repeated schemes to trick us into using inferior web browsers under constantly shifting aliases like Bing and Edge, but for openly denying the single core tenet of our environmentalism that the problems are massive, unsolvable, and imminent? Mr. Bill, we are forced to cast thee out. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Chili's Bar and Grill, who this week reversed their prior decision to discontinue a long-standing and widely loved food item, the skillet queso, having replaced it with a product that no one asked for or wanted. Healthy southwestern queso with fire-roasted green chilies, onions, and lime juice instead of soul-satisfying chili and, you know, actual flavor. But don't you see, dear other, and how this is so bad, this whole business of popular uprisings that reverse brand delusions, allowing this is terrible. No good can come of the practice of letting the commoners pitch a fit, raise a ruckus, and then tell their spiritual leaders in the Evangelical Church of Thunberg Reformed what to do. This sudden shifting of the tide in favor of traditionalists who push back against poorly conceived but wokely intentioned brand reimaginings is highly troubling for the future of our faith. Remember the good old days when you could just drop the Indian princess from Land O'Lakes butter or redwash Aunt Jemima into oblivion and replace her with Pearl Milling Company, whatever that is, or quietly delete Uncle Ben from what is now just Ben's Rice? Remember when we made them change Eskimo pie into Edie's creamy vanilla pie with chocolatey coating, and when at the height of our influence the Washington Redskins became the Commanders and the Cleveland Indians became the Guardians? We were totally winning. Those were the days. But now, ever since the great Dylan Mulvaney catastrophe of 2023, these people think they have power to do what they want instead of only having the obedience to do what we want. Whether it's Target or the Navy or NASCAR or Nike or Miller Lite or Kohl's or Jack Daniels or now Cracker Barrel and Chili's, it seems like we're losing at every turn. Somehow, we need to return to the good young days when highly unpopular and irrational rebranding decisions could simply be made and then imposed on people against their will, with the stern admonition that any resistance meant they were perpetuating cultural appropriation or systemic racism or white privilege. We didn't make up all these delightfully incoherent terms just so that people could ignore them whenever they happened to prefer some long-established cheesy chip dip. But it's worse than this. The entire tone of Chili's announcement is outrageous. Someone actually demanded justice for skillet queso. And Chili's replied that justice is coming before announcing a return of the fattening, unhealthy, and disgustingly flavor-rich appetizer. But justice is not a laughing matter. This post seems to imply justice is merely some buzzword and a disposable punchline about something as unserious as a favored food frustration, when it should rightly be reserved only for the most momentous issues in our culture, such as race, gender, climate activism, and murdered gorillas. Justice for Harambe! Say his name. For caving to the hungry masses, for putting profit ahead of public virtue, and for choosing meaty yumminess over vegetarian despair, we hereby cancel the Chili's. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to celebrate one of the most beautiful things we saw this week when Dictionary.com announced their selection for New Word of the Year, and lo and behold, it was the meaningless nonsense phrase 6-7. Oh, dear Otherin, you should have seen the delight on my face when I heard the news. It was literally music to my ears.
It's the shooter stay strapped. I don't need mine. Bro, put belt rate today behind. The way that switch, I know he dying. 6-7.
Yes. Just like the dulcet tones and soothing rhythms of that now famous Skrilla song, Doot Doot, it was precisely the selection of this ultra-annoying linguistic mouth virus that brought us such joy. You see, for nearly half a century, the professional language anarchists of our order have been working very diligently to subvert and destabilize the one thing that really threatens our movement, logic and reasoning. We've always known that if people are good at thinking, they will never follow our ways. And since language is the primary tool for facilitating cognition and rationality, our long game strategy has been to render language so clunky, so awkward, and so vacuous that it can no longer even be used to form coherent ideas. If people can't express complicated subjects in well-defined words and convey them to other people through cogent speech and clear writing, we win. Thus, when a nonsense expression like 6-7 can so take over an entire generation of minds, we know we're on the verge of an event horizon and human idiocy the likes of which even our most highly trained cultural revolutionaries could only dream of. What decades of diligent war against language has not accomplished, TikTok has performed in just a couple of years. It's no wonder that schools, too late for the solution obviously, stepped in to ban the word used by children who had turned the classroom upside down, making it a continual snipe hunt for manufactured scenarios in which to say 6-7. But you can't ban a nonsense phrase. If you strike it down with your school censorship, it will only become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. It's even too potent for parents to defile by using it themselves. And the fact that professional athletes played along certainly worked in its favor.
6-7, yeah. My kid's been doing it to me, too.
And so finally, we have arrived at the point where children define the culture, where words have no meaning, and where the proletariat can finally simply be left to its own devices to sink into their bedpan-carrying recliners as Brondo-drinking consumers whose only real ambition life is to watch Ow My Balls and yell out when their most cherished skibbity brain rot expressions flicker across the dull screens of what was once their brains. Ruling such a people will take virtually no effort whatsoever. Never before has the language revolution been so close to accomplished. This is like totally far more tubular and bitchin' than anyone in our generation could ever have imagined. As if...
1, 2, 3.
6-7! Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.